Welcome to another episode of People and Possibilities. I'm your host, Thomas Igeme, CEO of TL Partners. So far, we've been discussing the urgency of AI in HR and how it's reshaping roles and processes. Today, we're going to take a chance to look ahead. How can HR leaders build AI fluency across their teams? How will AI change the future of work? And what ethical considerations do we need to keep in mind? I'm joined in conversation by Naomi Davidson, executive partner at TL Partners, and she returns to share her thoughts on the strategic shifts HR leaders must embrace to keep pace in this AI-driven world. Let's dive into the future of AI in HR. What are the big ideas that you're kind of leaving this effort with?
I don't know if this is going to feel as big to other people as it does to me, but I feel that I was underestimating the importance of individual fluency when I walked into this. I was more focused on organizational impact and systems and tools. And the more that I look at it, the more that I think about it, the importance of addressing everyone's capability with AI is extremely exigent from my perspective. And I think you're fundamentally vulnerable without it as a leader, but I also think you're leaving your employees and the people in your company that you know and love. I think you're leaving them very, really vulnerable too, partly to being disrupted, but more importantly to making huge mistakes, bias around performance management. If you want to engage with this well, you need to build your own fluency. There's a couple of things I'm just really leaving this whole report very curious to explore more. So as we learn to use AI better, use it in places where it's more capable of operating and actually going to augment our own capability, what happens to our roles and how will our organizations shift? So one of the things I'm really looking forward to delving into next is how will the organization of tomorrow shift as our skills and our capabilities shift? That I think is going to be something that's going to change radically in the not too distant future. It's something that I really love to help leaders think about and be ahead of as well, especially when it comes to understanding that currently the transformation of AI on roles and jobs today is showing some gender inequity and other things that I think if we know that now, let's get ahead of that. When we start to be able to use AI to in our teams, right? What are the new problems that we can't solve today that we're going to be able to solve for tomorrow? And I'm part of a technologist, and I love the idea that technology is going to help us be able to do net new things. The things that I was surprised by in the interviews is by far and away the majority of what we're doing is using it to do what we do today. Use it for what we're able to do today and learn how to do that better and faster and smarter. But I'm also just really curious about what happens when there is a team, both people and agents working together to solve problems that may have been unsolvable before. We'll tend to put them at the bottom of our lists always, you know, as HR leaders, because it's either a really big lift or it's a high risk. And of course, things I'm thinking about there are DEI. Mm-hmm. This is an area that has, you know, HR has just slammed its head against recently and gotten defunded tremendously. You know, there's a tremendous amount of disappointment. And yet I know that the bias still exists and the inequity is out there. And I actually hope that working together with AI, we might become more effective at solving these problems, right? There are other more complex and systemic challenges that I think AI, coupled with great brainstorming and thought leadership of people, is going to be great at solving when things are just very complicated and tremendous amount of data involved. And I can't wait to see, you know, the really creative things that people do with that, right? Like, I envision a future when perhaps there's the whole process of getting supported to learn your job and become good at your job is one where you feel fundamentally resourced and there's never a dumb question again. Nobody really has to feel left out of the conversations that they need to be involved in because they have the ability to access far more of the organization and ask questions and have the visibility and transparency that they need because that information is actually siftable and sortable and understandable. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think that there's kind of a world of really exciting opportunity ahead. That's kind of where my head is going.
Yeah.
Ethics and governance for AI are absolutely critical. It's not a question of, do we need to be concerned about ethics and governance? And that's part of where your energy is going to go when it's not managing all the administrivia. So that's going to be one of the changes in our jobs, is we have to spend a lot more time thinking about that. That's a multidisciplinary problem. That's not just your problem as an HR leader. So don't take on more of the problem than you can take. Like, this is something that you need to be solving with your CIO, with your head of legal. This is a multidisciplinary. I think the other thing that I really see the best HR leaders doing in this world is understanding you can't answer all of the tough questions. You need to be setting yourself up to handle problems as they come, not be in a situation of feeling like you have to have the answers today. You said this the other day, and I really so strongly agree with this, is the one thing that you can be certain of today is that we have no idea how things are going to be different tomorrow. Yeah. We just know they will be different. And we know that whether we want or feeling ready for change or not, it's coming. So really understanding that instead of feeling the pressure to answer all the tough questions that people have, set up your team, set up your processes, set up your supports so that you feel like you have what you need to not be the center of answering everything.
Yeah.
I felt responsible for getting a lot smarter on AI before. And now I feel like maybe the answer that I would really say to myself back in my last job is, don't feel like you have to answer at all. Get the resources together to be empowering your team and your peers and your counterparts to be answering it with you.
I love and I completely agree with the, you don't have to know everything, right? And I also hold the fact that I know a lot of HR leaders are getting a lot of pressure from their CEOs and boards, really, on, well, what are we doing with AI? And the answer of, we're just beginning to get smart, is not good enough. I know you've done quite a bit of thinking on what it takes to build a roadmap. The right roadmap, I think, is actually quite organization specific. But what are some of the questions that an HR leader should be asking if they want to have a really competent, credible answer around what their AI strategy is to the board?
We really do try to arm you with a bunch of the answers to those tough questions that you're getting from the board and you're getting from your employees by pulling the wisdom from the crowd of all these people that we've talked to, right? Like, you don't have the time to talk to 30 HR leaders like we did. So, you know, just as one of the things in the report is, we really do try to help you with that, right? If you're being asked to reduce headcount, for example, what do you do with that? And how do you answer those questions? So just want to give that as a sense of, if you want to go deeper on those things as a result of listening to this, like, yeah, delve into the report, because we really do try to sift that out for you. When it comes to building your roadmap, one of the things that I found that CHROs are doing that is really smart is building a strategy that's very intuitive for them and fits within the, I would call it, sort of organizational winds of their company. So CHROs had strategies that were more business imperative focused, you know, finding a use case that they're getting pressured from a team about and going and seeing if they can solve that with AI. And so that's kind of a business focused way to do it. Others were using a more organizational, cultural approach, right? So they might be coming from a culture where there's a love and passion for innovation and for learning or for technology. And they're really just leveraging that love to explore and to experiment and to play with AI and build that AI fluency. Some leaders were really built using a very, I would call it, sort of incremental and organic way of building their strategy. Like, one person I talked to, I thought was, you know, really being smart about this. She was saying that she really didn't have time to figure it all out. Obviously, you know, the busy leader thing. So she just made it like one of her habits in every meeting that she's talking about, is saying to her team, is there a way that we could do that with AI? Have you researched that? What would be the pitfalls if we do it with AI? So she's just got a few questions, prompts, if you will, that she's always asking her team so that they're doing they're doing the thinking for her. And as a result, she's getting a very organic shift in her tech stack and in other resources and capabilities that I thought was really clever. You know, so I think it really is about, and we try to outline a few different approaches within the report of, how do you think about building a strategy that you're comfortable deploying and also is going to fit in your organization most naturally. And obviously, I say that because change and change management is always a really big deal. And if you're running at this against the winds of your organization, your job is, you know, almost impossible. But if you're really leveraging, like, where do you think you have a strength that's going to carry you with it? What I would say is really important.
You know, you mentioned the next kind of question you're excited about. What is really the implication of this for like the HR org of the future? One hypothesis I have, curious how much this aligns with where you're thinking and where we are, is it actually looks very similar to what we believed the talent function needed to look like way back in 2018 when we were working with quote unquote classic AI. And one of the reasons that we purposely built a product team with all the prerequisite roles, product analytics, product design, product management, even if at times we had to call them different names to work with the organization's job descriptions, was that increasingly both, I think, the opportunity that AI gives, but quite frankly, the kind of management that it needs and that iterative design like demands a product mindset of us and enables one in a way that we haven't had before. And so a lot of the things that you've mentioned around how do you go in there? How are you making meaning? Are you going in? Are you testing? Kind of like second nature to kind of classic great like user experience design and true great product design, but not so much in kind of the classic way we project launch in the world of HR. And so a sense that whatever it is, it'll start to look a bit more or a lot more, maybe in some cases, like a product org than it does our today's traditional HR org. And if that is true, one of the advantages that I'm then hoping come out of that as a sideway is that HR becomes more easily translatable to the rest of the business, particularly in tech. I think one of the challenges that HR has, or the people functioned as in the world of HR, is like, we're often operating under paradigms and roles, uniforms of our own and timescales, et cetera, that don't at all parallel the way the business builds and the way the business sells. And so we're kind of off on our island doing it our way and very much launching in kind of your more, if we're honest, classic large corporation using many of the tools and frameworks, you know, put forward by SHRM or whatever we're using, but that we're very much designed to help PepsiCo launch change, not small little startup in Silicon Valley, but that we didn't have any other option because how else are we going to deal with the scale of data we needed to look at, et cetera. And now I think with smart uses of Gen AI, I'm curious if we'll finally almost be able, for lack of a better term, to catch up in that way, not by just throwing more tasks on ourselves and driving ourselves thin, but actually by finally being able to reorganize and kind of have a very valid seat at the table. One, I'm curious how much that product look like a product team lens is aligned with where you're thinking and where perhaps you still have questions. And then kind of separately, what is your sense on that theory of the catch-up theory, so to speak?
Yeah. So one, I mean, I think the idea that the HR team could be enabled finally to move to a more product mindset is, I do think that's one of the opportunities here. And a lot of HR leaders, I think, have been hoping to be able to build towards that for a long time, but finding themselves stuck in part because of the skill gaps that their teams have and the effort that it takes to build those. Also, at times, to just get the investment you need to, as an HR team, to hire the kind of people that you would need to be able to take that product-centered approach. I know that that's a wall that I've run into, and I remember talking to you and running into a similar wall when you've been in those roles as well. It absolutely, I think, is more of the direction. I also think, and I don't have great language around this yet, but I've also noticed that it's not just product. It's maybe there's an element of developer in there as well. The change that I'm noticing that is going to boost some HR teams radically in this direction is the ability to be a developer and to build and then to test, as you're saying. So now, as an HR person with very low skill set, I can go out and I can build an app within my environment very quickly and very easily with no or low code experience. And that promise of no or low code development is really here today. Yeah. And so that's the big shift that I think really starts to make it possible for HR teams to do that, because then you get the HR expertise and you get the builder expertise. And then, of course, we're looking then for the data sophistication and the testing sophistication. But again, if you're coupled with, if you're really using agents in the way that I think is possible, then you can build that, augment yourself with that capability today. Carefully, though, because you should always, as we said before, get a sense of how good it is at the things you're really good at. So you know how it's doing that user testing or other things, and you can kind of use that with a grain of salt. You can build things and you can operate in a way today that you never could before. So I do think that what HR is capable of, or what any backend function is capable of, is going to shift really radically. You know, the being able to play a fundamentally different role in the organization and a kind of better seat at the table, I do think that that's true, right? A lot of HR teams today are bogged down by just keeping the lights on, and they cover so many bases, right? Like, you have to set the infrastructure to support the organization, you know, to manage compliance, to manage, you know, all the pipes and the systems that just get people paid and get them, you know, safely to work and all of those things. And that's a lot of work. And then you have all of the systems that kind of make sure you know who is where and when and why and how. And that's like a whole set of tech and infrastructure that you've got to manage. And then there's the, you know, the learning and development expertise. And then there's the HRBP expertise around management and compliance and fairness and equity and, you know, all of those things. And, you know, like, you, there are just so many different skills and expertise that are required just to keep the ship running. And I do think that most teams kind of get bogged down by just managing that. And as AI becomes better at managing a lot of that administrivia, I do think that it frees those people up to spend their time solving more important questions. Like, I think the HRBP, for example, is a role that's going to change in really some cool and beautiful ways. Like, it's a lot less about solving the same problems over and over again, but really being able to shift into a more strategic position. And I know a lot of HRBPs get bogged down by all of the same questions from managers over and over and over again. Well, I do think that a lot of that is sort of those standard questions can be addressed in a more automated way that can free up HRBPs to be really the strategic partner to the business that they've always wanted to be, you know, really are truly good at, is being a thought partner and a supporter. When you think about shifting to a product mindset, is there a particular capability that you imagine HR teams having that they don't have today?
I think there are a couple. I think data fluency, analytics, et cetera. I think what's cool about AI is that historically, building that fluency required a lot more kind of training and experience than it does today. I think what today is like learning a couple of key prompts and ideas used to be like learning how to do days and days of analysis. But the ability of every single person to be able to answer, proactively answer the questions that you mentioned, a one developer at OpenAI asking, which is like, what is really success in here? How would I measure and see that? What are kind of the different inputs? What are the stages coming along? That is just a capability around then being able to then interpret that data as it's coming in that feels like one piece that feels different. I would say that the second capability that is often developed rather late in HR relative to other functions because of the sheer volume of work that we have to handle is just some kind of core strategic thinking chops, which are, okay, when I have a little bit of space, what is my SWOT analysis? Where do we go when we can go in all of these different directions? How do we become kind of proactive around where the organization should go, what data we would use to solve that, and how we pull through? So there's another set around kind of just some strategic thinking skills. And then I think the last piece is actually really around the question of ethics and bias. And I'll be honest, I don't know today whether that becomes a new standalone function, perhaps an expansion of what we think of DEI, or is this kind of a general fluency that like we're going to ask as part of the HR skill set? I have arguments going one way or the other. But what I think is absolutely clear to me is the bar has just got raised up. And actually, historically, this is a question that like mostly HR ceded to the CIO in terms of what is like the ethics of data. And I think increasingly, all our questions of inclusion and bias and equity, we're going to find our first and foremost data questions and the use of data and what data we show and how we interpret it and where it goes. And so our ability to influence any of those things is going to require a much greater, both like data fluency, but also kind of a deep understanding of data ethics and bias and all of those pieces. So those are the three that come to mind for me. I'm curious what of that resonates and what if there's anything else that you're thinking about.
That all resonates with me. And I love what you just said about the question of DEI and equity becomes a data question in this world and for HR leaders. And I think that's a real insight. And I really want to underscore that as one of the things that HR leaders need to be thinking about. If there's an area to invest in getting smarter about, get smarter about that, because you will look back on this and your time and the impact you had with more confidence that you did the right thing, you did the good thing. Mm-hmm. In that. And if you don't, and you kind of just assume that everyone else is going to fix it around you, I think you're more likely to be part of the problem than the solution. One thing, though, that I think is interesting to add is like, why become a product organization? What value do we get out of it? I mean, it sounds cool. So I know I've always liked it because it sort of sounds kind of cool. The real value that I've always perceived as an HR leader is that instead of forcing programs down people's throats, you're building solutions that are so valuable to them. They're pulling them off the shelves, right? And you know they're pulling your solutions off the shelves and they're doing really great things with them because you can see that. And that, so I think that's always the bar that many HR leaders want to hold themselves to is, sure, I can pull the authority card and just tell you, you have to do this and stay compliant and whatever. But then I know I'm going to get people kind of phoning it in and not caring about it. And I've got people doing the right motions, but not actually caring about, you know, the shift in culture or the collaboration or the performance or feedback that I really want them to do and I want them to care about and I want them to do it well. And I think if you take a product mindset and you approach it as a product, you have a shot. And if you don't, you don't.
We could go into this so much more, but I will just close and say that the best development that I ever got as an employee, the highest engagement that I ever saw as an employee was in an organization, and it was in management consulting, where there was almost no compliance around those things. There was no recommendation on X number of times to meet with your manager. There was kind of no little sheet on here, like the 5 or 3 questions, but it'd been so ingrained in the culture. What I love about the promise, like you said, of a product experience is like, and part of why it was so ingrained is like, everybody wanted it. The world was small and kind of unique enough, and there are unique things that play in there. I've not yet been in an organization where employees experience such incentive alignment at all levels and up to the org. And so all of these quote unquote development things, they were good for the client, but we kind of packaged them in a way that was good for the client, was good for the partner, was good for the manager, was good for the associate. And all of those forces were just demanding more of it and more pull. And it's just a completely different world in which the ways that you're driving productivity are being pulled from you by the organization versus the other way around. And the closer I think we can get to that, the more rewarding the work will feel. There's so much more here, very clearly, as we go through. I'll close our conversation at this point and just end with the fact that one, the AI and HR report is coming out soon. So if folks are listening and are really curious to dig into these and many other ideas, please get in touch with us. I'm at tlpartners.biz. And in particular, if you have specific questions to your organization, whether it is around your roadmap or about how you might begin to think about applying some of these or other ideas to truly make sure that you are seeing value that your employees can feel and value that your board can understand, we'd love to chat with you as well. Thank you so much for this chat, Naomi. It was fun.
Thank you as well. It's a great conversation. Clearly something that's an exciting transformation to behold and be part of.
Thank you for joining us in this episode and throughout our ongoing series on AI in HR. AI isn't just about automating tasks. It's about transforming how HR operates and enabling leaders to focus on strategic high-impact work like never before. As we move forward, remember that embracing AI is not just a technological shift, it's a cultural and ethical one. And the people leaders who will come out on top, and dare I say, will look back and be proud of how they led at this time, are the ones who take the cultural and ethical as well as the technological implications of this work seriously. So stay curious, stay informed, and keep exploring. If you enjoyed this series, don't forget to subscribe and share it with your colleagues. Until next time, I'm Thomas Agema. The possibilities are endless.